Reality shows are common for television today. People have become fascinated with the real-life drama of other people's lives and how they react to adverse situations. One of the genres of reality shows are the makeover programs where families receive new homes, new looks, and new everything. The criterion for families to be considered is based upon their needs, their sacrifice for others, or some type of tragedy befalling them. No one can doubt the wonderful blessings many people have received from others as they have their homes remodeled, their appearance enhanced, and new hope given to their lives. The attention given programs such as this is how needy people are given such wonderful gifts from others. It speaks well of many communities who are willing to go to such extremes to help their fellow man. However, and there is always a however, a point that is missing in these exercises of human benevolence is the true reality of life. While the remodeling, remaking, and renewing of lives are wonderful and sensational for television, when the lights go off, the cameras stop rolling, and the crowds go home, life remains in much the same manner as it was before. Yes, the families are able to enjoy life more than before the makeover, but the change has taken place largely only on the outside. Renovating a family takes more than a nice house, a new car, good looks, and new clothes. Society portrays happiness as the attainment of material things. While tragedy and sorrow fall upon all of us, the true worth of reality is found in the renewal of the inward person. These are the changes that are worth living for. If you take a bum off the street and dress him a $1,000 suit, you still have a bum in a $1,000 suit. The application is that window dressing does not solve the more pressing needs of man. Character of a man or the inward self must be changed to find true fulfillment. King Solomon found all the things that men seek for today. He found wisdom, Ecclesiastes 1, pleasure and wealth, Ecclesiastes 2, and pondered fame, chapter 1. But all was vanity. The word vanity is something that is of no profit under the sun. There is joy and excitement at a new bike after time. It is neglected and forgotten. Why? Material things rust and break down in time and then soon laid aside. An interesting study for reality shows would be the follow-up 10 years or more later when the families have lived in their new houses, and the question is examined as to how these things truly change their lives. Life changes measured by material gain are fleeting. Changes made to the life of a person will last forever. The Apostle Paul described the value of changing the inner person rather than focus on the outer person. For which cause we faint not, though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. 2 Corinthians 4. Seeking those things that are above, Colossians 3, have true worth. Seeking the things of this earth have no lasting value, 2 Peter chapter 3. Jesus did not come to change the economic, political, or social status of man. He came to impress his life upon their hearts. From hearts filled with the will of Christ, Jesus Christ, changes will take place that are eternal. But what shall it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul, or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Mark 8. Renovation of the family can only take place when Christ is the center of the family, the central theme of our lives, valued above all earthly possessions, and whose footsteps we carefully walk after each day. Jesus told the woman at the well in John 4, whosoever drinks of this water shall thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. Took a little time to read that for you, not exactly knowing where's a lot of the origination where that came from. And there were a couple places where I actually changed it, where the word said home, and I actually put the word house. I realized there was a magazine in days gone by called Better Homes and Gardens. I know that. No doubt probably came into our house at a time. But when reality we're talking about is better house and gardens. And because just as we give the definition of what the church is, and we talk about it's not the sheetrock, and we talked about that Lord's Day, and not the pews and the wood and the carpet and all of the steel and the electricity. It's the church is the ecclesia, the called out. So a home is not the concrete. I understand the language that people use, but that's a house. And so we'll be talking a little bit more about that in time. But I thought that that would be at least a start for us to be able to get our mind, our juices going to be able to talk about some things. I'd like to talk briefly about America's home today. I'm glad that you're here, Curtis. I was hoping that you would be here tonight. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit, and I'll talk to, my friend Katie back there, but, somebody will share this information hopefully with her. And so as I said last night, anybody that's under 96 will be helped with this lesson. When we get done, you'll see who maybe it would really particularly have been beneficial to. So when we talk about America's home or homes today, divorce is prevalent. 1,180,000 per year. Children born out of wedlock. The next chart will give some statistics. Cohabitation or shacking up. Same-sex unions, gay marriage, single-parent homes on the increase, child abuse in many different forms, sin-filled homes, drinking, drugs, filthy entertainment, lying, gambling, cheating, filthy language, parents fighting, and cursing. America's home today, the babies born out of wedlock, compared to the 1990s when a third of Americans were born out of wedlock, now 41% of babies do not have married parents. There is a racial divide. 73% of black babies are born outside of marriage. 53% of Latino babies are born outside of marriage. 29% of white babies are born outside of marriage. Compiled by Child Trends. When we have a breakdown of the home, one of the problems is when we have increase in materialism, money. Particularly the wholesome or God-fearing home is affected. We talk about the modern family. There was a program, I've never watched the full program, but I've seen enough of it. The modern family will make you want to smash your television whenever you saw the program called Modern Family, with some of the things that were going on in that. Some years ago, when Pontiac was still being made, they said, you know, and even talking about Buick, this is not your father's automobile. In other words, they try to get away from what's older or mature. You know, you want to look cool. But Outback Steakhouse a few years ago had a commercial that said, no rules, just right. So the increase in materialism has caused a breakdown of the home. When you think about the rich man, Luke chapter 16, decrease in spiritual interest. Rebellion against authority. As we talked about Frank Sinatra, I'm going to do it my way. And he did it his way. That's not going to work out too good on the day of judgment, though. Television is a constant barrage of attacks on the home. Friendly and positive portrayal of homosexuality. Anybody seen some of the commercials lately? I mean, we are just bombarded. And this is even on maybe just a news program that, you know, we're seeing same-sex commercials and it'll make you sick. Cohabitation, living together, presented as normal and healthy. Alcohol, gambling, and lewd conduct is glamorized. Lying is being shrewd and doing what it takes to get ahead. Everybody does it. Parents pictured as dopes and unable to lead children. They're not real smart. When we talk about the breakdown of the home, mothers are portrayed as dominant and career-minded, and if you are not in that realm, you are considered as ignorant and poor white trash. I don't like to do this, but from time to time, whenever I am able to do something like this, and I had a message here that I had sent to myself, I want to read something briefly to you. I saw this on the news the other day. And I don't know how to make you feel. So I can get this thing to come up. Jill Filipovic claims stay-at-home mothers create worse and more sexist men and come with overwhelmingly negative consequences for women in a Tuesday Twitter thread. I don't have Twitter. Who knows what's going to happen now with the new owner. The series of tweets accompanied her recent Substack piece titled, "It's a Bad Idea to Pay Women to Stay Home." I really wasn't sure what that meant, so I had to keep reading. Which rejected the concept of paying stay-at-home parents as proposed in a New York Times guest essay Saturday. Ms. Filipovic tweeted, "The problem with paying people to stay at home with kids, though, is that we're overwhelmingly not talking about people. We're talking about mothers, and pushing women out of work comes with overwhelmingly negative consequences." From there, she proceeded to assert that the traditional family structure is terrible for women. The carer, earner, nuclear family model we think of as traditional is a historical anomaly that is tremendously isolating and often financially devastating for the care, almost always a woman. It also reinforces the gender division of labor, which ripples out to all women. She advocated for a robust social welfare state as opposed to paying mothers a small stipend and claimed you solve poverty by giving poor people enough money to live, period. I thought it was by getting a job. Filipovic then launched into the idea that sexist men are encouraging the overwhelmingly negative idea of being a stay-at-home mom. More mothers at home make for worse, more sexist men who see women as mommies and helpmates. If you can see my eyes roll, they just roll. The author tweeted, adding, "Men with stay-at-home wives are more sexist than men with working wives. They don't assess women's workplace contributions fairly, and they are less likely to hire and promote women." She also argued that full-time mothers are psychologically and emotionally worse off than working mothers by just about every measure, and they are more prone to depression, anxiety, and anger. They are much more likely than working mothers to say that they are struggling and less likely to say that they are thriving, she went on to say. To fix this, she wants better paid parental leave policy, universal high-quality child care, and child payments. In the past, she encouraged wives to divorce your Republican husbands over the contentious 2018 confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh and told Democrats in 2020 to pledge no white guys will run for president in the next cycle. And that wasn't on just some Yahoo network. Of course, they may call them Yahoos, but it was on the Fox News network. Then I actually saw it and watched a little bit of it, and I couldn't rewind it fast enough where I could, and I just found it online. So when you're dealing with something like that, is there any wonder why we're having some problems with stay-at-home, the idea of mother stay-at-home? Some of you may know who she used to work for Fox News, and I watched this situation, Megyn Kelly. She eventually went to NBC News. And somebody made mention that working mothers were not able to spend as much time with their children. Would anybody with a logical brain say that a working father would not be able to spend as much time with their children? She commenced to have a come apart. She went bonkers. And saying that, you know, he was all kind of these bad things. Well, it's just obvious. If you're gone, you're not able to be with them. And that she was trying to defend the idea of being single mothers. I'm not trying to knock single mothers, because sometimes that's no fault of their own. I'm just saying, what does God want us to do? That's what I'm here for tonight. And I'm just telling you how the world portrays working women, non-working men or women, and men in the house and not in the house. We continue on. Fathers are portrayed as buffoons and doofuses and weak and submissive, kind of like a Gomer Pyle. That's whatever I see a lot of times. You know, the dad's an idiot. I mean, he can't come in out of the rain. I mean, he's stupid. And that's the way that fatherhood is torn down because of situations like that. Children are seen as cool and competent and able to control their own life and wiser than their parents. Irresponsible way to marriage to be entered into. Immature youths and uneducated adults for all the wrong reasons. Disrespect or disregard for God's word. Only the slow, ill-informed, dim-witted, and unenlightened see importance, value, and validity in following the Bible. Whenever I was in school, Rick, I don't know if he came before you was there, but after, but Ted Turner came to the University of Alabama and spoke. This is whenever Turner Broadcasting System, system was on, and the Braves were on that. And, you know, he had at one time married Jane Fonda, but he spoke, and I happened to be where I could listen to him. And one of the things that stuck out in my mind is he said that, you know, really, really, those people who go to church and people who follow the Bible is really for women and old people. That's what he said. Religion was for women and old people. And, you know, not the really highly educated. Let's see how that's working out. It's for old people, women, poor, and the uneducated. Not many wise, not many noble are called. Again, Christ is needed in our home today. Help us raise our children. Help us deal with illness in the proper way. Help us when death invades our home. His word is needed today in teaching to regard salvation, the one true church, the true worship, righteous living, true morality, the godly home, pure and holy, proper values or priorities in this life. Charles Francis Adams, the 19th century political figure and diplomat, kept a diary. One day he entered, went fishing with my son today. A day wasted. His son, Brooke Adams, also kept a diary, which is still in existence. On that same day, Brooke Adams made this entry. Went fishing with my father, the most wonderful day of my life. The father thought he was wasting his time while fishing with his son, but his son saw it as an investment of time. The only way to tell the difference between wasting and investing is to know one's political figure and diplomat kept a diary. One day he entered, went fishing with my son today. A day wasted. His son, Brooke Adams, also kept a diary, which is still in existence. On that same day, Brooke Adams made this entry. Went fishing with my father, the most wonderful day of my life. The father thought he was wasting his time while fishing with his son, but his son saw it as an investment of time. The only way to tell the difference between wasting and investing is to know one's ultimate purpose in life and to judge accordingly. My dad's in the hospital in Birmingham, but he's doing a lot better. And so me and my three sisters were very conscientious about trying to make sure that he's going to be okay. And as I have said on more than one occasion, I really felt that it was my dad's job. I felt like that whenever I was growing up, that he had been given a commission to make my life miserable. And he was extremely successful at that. To make my life miserable. But now, outside of my love for the Lord and my soon-to-be bride, my dad is the one that he's the one who's taught me more than anything. He taught me how to do and be respectful and to work and to be a Christian and to be a man and all those things. And you know what? Life has not always got a bunch of bubble wrap around it. Life doesn't always have, you know, bumper pads where somebody can always come in and scoop you up and keep you from bumping your knee. He really made it where life was real, where I had to learn responsibility to handle certain things. And I love him and appreciate him for that, just as most of you all appreciate your families and your parents. The ones that seem like the ones that were the more difficult on us, the ones that we appreciate the most, rather than somebody who just kicked us out and said, have fun. There's a Spanish story of a father and son who had become estranged. The son ran away, and the father set off to find him. He searched for months to no avail. Finally, in the last desperate effort to find him, the father put an ad in a Madrid newspaper. The ad read, "Dear Paco, meet me in front of this newspaper office at noon on Saturday. All is forgiven. I love you. Your father." On Saturday, 800 Pacos showed up, looking for forgiveness and love from their fathers. Now, what do you get from that? Well, there's a lot of children that have been not loved properly. There's a lot of people here who I'm glad to know, who know what manual labor is. That's not just the president of Mexico. It's manual labor. And I can remember whenever we would have to, you know, haul hay, and my sister said, "We don't want to." I can hear mother say it. "You don't have to. You get to." And that was always the response. "You don't have to. You get to." And so they taught us to learn how to do those things, that life was not always about doing just those things that you want to do. And so as we mature, then we began to see, and we tried to do the same thing with our children. Brother Paul Earnhardt, in some of his writings, said that he was a husband in training. Well, I got a little different way of saying that. I'm a parent in training. I have 4 children. They're all married. None of them live in my basement. In fact, I had to, you know, the pinnacle of success is, you know, you get your children married, and I went and lived with 2 of my children after I sold my house. And I decided that there could only be 1 bull in a house. Can't be 2 bulls in a house, only 1 bull. And so, my children are, thankfully, at this time, they're all faithful Christians, and hadn't had to go get any of them out of jail. You know, don't have to pay any of their bills, and they attend worship service. Now, that does not mean that that's going to continue on, but what their mother and I tried to do, and a lot of other people tried to do who were helpful mentors, was to help them, to teach them, to show them what they needed to do. And it was not how to throw a curveball, and how to kick a field goal, or how to be able to shoot a free throw, or how to be able to do anything else, like riding a motorcycle, or how to be able to conjugate nouns, or to not dangle your participles, or to be able to write an essay, or to be able to do some kind of system generation on your laptop. All of those may be valuable, but how many of our children can name all of the presidents? I can do that. How many can name all the states and the capitals? But how many children can name the 12 apostles? How many children can say the books of the Bible? How many can give the generations, the judges? How many can be able to turn in their Bible and find out where the book of Hosea is, sometimes called Hosea? How many would be able to know how to be able to go and find the book of Ezra? To be able to do those kind of things requires some time and some attention. Just like being able to try to figure out on how to run this scheme right here on the football field, or how to be able to, you know, crank and run the John Deere. It takes time and effort and some attention. Christ is needed in our home today. Studies show that the absence of the father expresses itself in male children in 2 very different ways. It is linked to increased aggressiveness on one hand and greater manifestations of effeminacy on the other. 1987 study of violent rapists found that 60% of them came from single parent homes. I didn't do this study, okay? Don't shoot me. A Michigan State University study of adolescents who committed homicides found that 75% of them were from broken homes. Girls without fathers fared no better. They become sexually active sooner and are more likely to have out of wedlock children. Dr. James Dobson and Children at Risk from 1990. Imagine what it'd be like today. One startling bit of research conducted by the Christian Business Men's Committee found the following. When the father is an active believer, when the father is an active believer, There's about a 75% likelihood that the children will also become active believers. But if only the mother is a believer, this likelihood is dramatically reduced to 15%. That does not mean that mothers ought not be members of the church. It's not what that means. It means that the head, the way God decided for it, the leadership. But imagine the benefits of having dad and mom being a Christian. Look at the benefit of that. I was always taught, Lionel, you marry who you date who you associate with. That didn't mean that we couldn't have friends, but we didn't play around with sin. We didn't just try to take fire into our bosom. We didn't just for the fun of it, go out and have a good time and party with the wild ones. And so mom and dad were very involved in my life, just as I was with my children. Remember, I hadn't accomplished yet. I haven't finished yet. I'm still a parent in training. Some of y'all probably heard of this character. And I'm not so sure, but that I may have shared this in 2016, whenever I was here. I have a lot of admiration. I really do for Tim Tebow. Now, Tim claims to be a Christian, but the world doesn't think so highly of Tim. They may call him a Bible thumper. I don't want to hear it. Keep it to yourself. Boo. Nobody cares. Jesus boy. Shut up. In fact, I actually have followed him on Facebook because of some of the things that he's actually done. He seems like a good guy. Now, he's not a Christian under New Testament circumstances, but I still think he's a good person. But some of y'all have probably heard of Bruce. Y'all heard of Bruce? In 1976, when we moved from one congregation to another in Birmingham, the Olympics were on. And I remembered watching Bruce win the decathlon. He was some more athlete. And so Bruce is, I saw it on today. I'm a woman. I'm so courageous, or she's so courageous. We love you. She's my hero. We'll never judge you. You're just wonderful. But I believe that that is a lot of what is wrong with America. We denigrate, besmirk, and belittle that which is wholesome and upright, and we uphold that which is not wholesome and good and right. In the words of the line, Houston, we got a problem. Oh, how Christ is needed in our homes today. All right, so that was our introduction. So here's what I want to try to talk about. I told you this last night. Why is it that we lose our young people? And again, I'm considering you to be young if you're under 96. So why do we lose our young people? In most ways, it's the same why and how we lose middle-aged and older people. But we do acknowledge that there's a unique things that challenge young people. So we need to understand that. Why do we lose our young people? 2 Samuel chapter 18, and the king said to the Cushite, is the young man Absalom safe? So the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man. Then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Let me ask you, why do you think Absalom went astray? He was raised to go astray. If you raise, I've heard people talk about on, you know, how good a pit bull can be, and it's according to how you raise them. Okay, well, whatever. You know, you can raise a black Angus bull to do certain things. You can raise a horse. You can raise, I guess, just about any animal to be a certain way. But you can train a child. And the reason that I know that you can is because we're told in the New Testament to train up a child from the book of Proverbs. And then in the New Testament, book of chapter Ephesians chapter 6. Train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they will not depart from it. Set them on the right course. But Absalom was raised to go astray. His father reared him that way. And why is that? Why do children, why do people go astray? Here's what we got to understand. Faith is not inherited. I used to tell this. I'm a whole lot younger than Rick. Whenever I was in school at Tuscaloosa, Pat and Donahue and I were there around the same time. And I can remember the first Sunday that I was there at the South Tuscaloosa congregation in Tuscaloosa. The building was just about full. Now, there would have been some parents there, granted, because they had to bring little Johnny and little Susie down there. And so Sunday morning, the building was just practically full. Brother Hiram Hutto was preaching there at the time. And then Sunday night, a lot of the parents had left and gone back to their places of wherever. Well, so the building was a little less full. And then came Wednesday night. Quite a bit of the crowd was gone. And then the next Sunday, the crowd was a little smaller. And then that Sunday night, it was a little smaller. And it kept on doing that, and by the time we got to be around the middle of the semester, it's kind of like, you know, you could throw a bomb out there and not hit somebody. Where'd they go? Well, what the problem is that a lot of times they've been going to church, but the faith of their mom and dad did not get inherited. And so they didn't have a real need or a real desire. They felt, why do I need to go to church? Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Faith is not inherited. As I said a while ago, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. So what is it, some of the things that we need to do? How to worship. A child that can go to school and sit up and pay attention at school can pay attention and sit up at worship service. I'm not saying that they may not lean over and get sleepy because the preacher is boring. That's why I always try to keep something in my pocket. I fling it sometime, time to time. But how to worship, but also how to love God. How do you love God? I think we said a little bit of it last night. If you love me, what is it, Curtis? You'll keep my commandments. That's how we know that you love God. And that's how you teach your children that you love God. To attend Bible classes. You teach them about the plan of salvation. You teach them the value of obeying God faithfully till death. At Underwater Heights, where I currently am, we have been hit pretty hard over the last couple of years with death. The majority of the people that we've had to pass have been older. Not every one of them, but most of them have been older. But just about without no exception, they all came until they either went into the hospital or they were so sick they couldn't even go to the hospital. The last place that they really went was to worship service. And we have some now. We have quite a few of those octogenarians. Those people that are above 80, Brother Johnson. Those people that, you know, I've been informed that I'm not supposed to say she's elderly. I'm just supposed to say she's mature. But that's what she says she is. But, you know, they're not a spring chicken. And they may walk a little slow. And they may not be able to maneuver as easily. But they keep on coming. They keep on coming. When it's hot. When it's cold. Whenever the things. And it makes you think about, Curtis and I talked about that there in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. When all the stuff starts wearing out. Yeah. The value of obeying God faithfully till death. When David did what he did with Absalom, instead of go easy on him, he should have said, deal with him as he needs to be dealt with. A lot of times, I'm not a school teacher, but if you were to ask most school teachers, who do you think the problem, where do you think the problem normally resides? Most of the time it probably resides in the child's parent. That's where they have most of the problems. Is that right, Ty? That's where most of the problems are. Most of them, it's because parents do not support the administration. I'm not saying all administrators are, you know, without flaw. But it's because, you know, now, Johnny, if somebody shoves you and hits you, you punch them back. And to learn to respect authority. We got to learn to do that. My youngest son, I asked him some years back, I said, why is it that people quit going to church? And so, this is what he told me. He said, poor examples. These were his answers. And I said, from who? He said, well, your parents and your grandparents, your older siblings and other Christians. Well, he was the baby, so he did have some other siblings. He talked about a lack of discipline. And I think that's important. Now, these are his reasons. No path to follow strictly. Loose, liberal way of thinking. A lack of commitment. And I find it interesting because a lot of his things had to deal with athletic ideas. He was the best athlete in the family. And things worked out really well for Angie and me. He had gotten scholarships to go play baseball at the University of Tennessee. But he got hurt his senior year. That was the best thing that ever happened. We didn't have to make that decision for him. He wasn't ready to go. He was a young 17-year-old, but he got hurt and couldn't go. It's the best thing that happened. And he understands that too. I didn't want to have to be the one to tell him no. His mother didn't want to have to be the one, and he wasn't ready, but he wasn't ready to go. But where do these things come from? Do you go buy these at a blue light special at Kmart that no longer exists? Do you go buy a book and get these kind of things? They come from mom and dad and their mentors. And then my middle son, I asked him, he happened to be around, I said, so give me some reasons why people leave the church. He said, well, he just kind of got right down with it. He said, it ain't fun. He says, it's not fun. He said, it's not a game, and most people want fun in games, not what's restrictive. Gimme, gimme, gimme. I want candy. I want to play. I want to do this. And as I've told several times, I don't know at what age that I finally... Mom and Dad finally got me under control. But you know, I was up several years old where I didn't want to go either. I had too many other things I wanted to do. I had snakes to shoot, bikes to ride, and ball to play. I had things I'd rather be doing. But they didn't give me that option. Well, Lonnie, you know, if you want to, you can stay at the house. That wasn't an option. No, you're going. They don't want rules or things that make them feel bad. It's not the social norm, what everybody else is doing. And that is a problem. Well, nobody else is doing this. Nobody else gets on Sunday. When we get to the understanding that we don't have to wonder what we're doing on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night, what are we going to do Sunday? Well, we already know what we're doing. There's no question where we're going to be on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. And it's peculiar and odd to most people. Again, why is it that we lose young people? It happens, but does it matter to you? Well, here's why I think that it should matter to you. Because their souls are at stake. That's why it should matter. It should matter to all of us. Why is it that a lot of children go astray? I'm going to give you some reasons that I believe that it is. Number one, hypocritical parents. Mom and dad, you may fool others, but you're not going to fool your children. If you're not the same person on Tuesday that you are on Sunday, they will know. They will lose respect for you and the religion that you profess. Little children, and children don't just hear what you say, they see what you say and what you do. They pay attention to your actions. If you tell them not to lie, but they see you lying either on the telephone or in some other situation, you tell them they ought not smoke and you smoke, you tell them don't drink and you drink, they tell you to go to church and you don't go to church. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Matthew chapter 18, verse 6. You may fool others, but you're not going to fool your children. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, the outside of them, that they may be clean also. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. One of the things that I really think is important, one of the things that I saw my mom and dad do and that I tried with my children's mother, is that if we had a disagreement, we had that disagreement not in front of the children. As I've already said, if you're not the same person on Tuesday, they're going to know that you are on Sunday. They will lose respect for you and the religion you profess. Mom and dad, you cannot be going behind the back of the other. You must show solidarity. You must show unity. And who might I be thinking of? Well, what about Isaac and Rebekah? You remember that circumstance? Where one had a favorite and the other one had a favorite? How'd that work out? Parents cannot have differing agendas, or I can assure you that trouble is certain ahead. You are the parent, so be the parent. Mom and dad must support the same purpose and goal, the child's well-being. One of the worst scoldings that I ever got by one of the members whenever I was preaching in Walker County, my middle son was probably 5 years old, maybe six, five. But we were having our singing class, and I had to teach him and train him to do certain things like stand up and speak up where people could hear you. And he announced his number, and I said, louder. And he did it just not much louder. And I said, louder. And it was not as loud as it said. And I said, louder! Well, then the faucet began to come on. And so here he goes, and you know, the tears start. And so one of the older ladies, who's deceased now, she just got all over me. She said, you ought to be your son's best friend. And I said, Sister Ruth, that's her name. I said, I appreciate you saying that. I said, but I will never, ever be my son's best friend. But I pray to God that I will be his father and I will be the one to teach him and to train him to do what's right. She had two children, neither one of which were Christians. We've got to learn to be the parent and to be the grown-up in the crowd. Unify the soul, the child's soul is at stake, and yours too. There were some parents that don't parent. You remember Eli? He did not restrain his children. Somebody made mention of Carol Sutton last night. My dad was in a gospel meeting somewhere along the way, and I think it may have been in Kentucky whenever he was living there, and Carol Sutton had come up there, and one of the places where they went, this little boy, he just couldn't behave. And I was asking Jonathan about it a few years ago, and if he knew anything about it, he said, no, I never heard that story. But the little boy had slung mashed potatoes on the ceiling. And somehow or another, they had gone out of the room, and Brother Sutton said, don't do that anymore. Well, it kind of scared the child a little bit. And they said, well, and the mom and dad came in and they said, we just don't know how to make him mine. We just don't know how to make him mine. And he said, I tell you what. He said, you give me about 30 minutes. And he said, well, we'll have a coming together. And whenever something occurred and they came back about 30 minutes and the child was about to touch on him, he said, no! The child stepped back, didn't bother anymore. And they said, how'd you do that? As if it was some mystery. Yeah, it's a mystery. I guess we'd rather go one, two, and the mother says three. Parents need to know and must know how to say no and mean it. Discipline is real and it's true love. Again, I don't have all the answers because I'm talking to me. My children were not without flaws. I wasn't without flaws. But I can tell you this, if my dad had not stayed on top of me, I wouldn't have been at least where I am. He kept me from getting into very much trouble because he loved me so much that I thought he hated me. He disciplined me. Discipline is true and real love. Where we lived in Walker County, my two older children were in the backyard riding their bicycles, and I don't remember, I heard this racket, and I went to the front yard, and somebody had run off the road and tore down about 100 feet of our fence. So I went out to see what was going on, and it was a young girl, and I wasn't sure what was going on. She wasn't exactly quite right, but I really couldn't understand what was going on. And she kept trying to stand up. She couldn't stand up. Well, the local police were called, and they didn't know much, couldn't do much. And then not long after that, the state trooper was called, and he hadn't been there more than about 5 minutes, and he was putting her in handcuffs. And by that time, my dad was over another place where some of the cows were, and because we had cows that were about to get out, and I was having to keep the cows in. And the mother of this girl had shown up, and the stepdad. And the state trooper said, well, she's going to go and dry out or do whatever it was. The mother pitched a hissy fit. You need to let my daughter go, just screaming and hollering. The dad, maybe then stepdad, he said, I think that might be the best thing. This is my daughter. I love her too much to let that happen. Of course, my dad is pretty calm and quiet, and everybody likes him, supposedly, except us four children. And my dad said, just gently, he said, you might want to listen to your husband. She turned around. She said, shut up, old man. I've never seen somebody say shut up to my dad. But she said, I love her too much. You take these verses, we got to move. But it talks about how the discipline is real. The child's soul is at stake. Another problem is worldly friends. Young people rarely understand this. I'm a strong. I can influence them for good. It just simply does not happen. Very rare, or if ever. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. I don't see anybody that I know by name at the moment, but, well, Meg's right there. I'll use Meg for a second. Let's say this for just a second. Let's say that there's a table similar to this. We won't talk about the Lord's table. But let's say that somehow or another we were able to get Meg up on that table right there. And to me, she looks like she'd weigh about almost a nickel 3/8. Not much. We'll say she weighs 100 pounds. Well, I weigh now. I've lost about 60 pounds. Yeah, I was a kind of a fluffy boy. We'll say I'm about 270 right now. And so she's standing up here. and I'm on the ground, and we grab hands, how easy do you think it is for her to get me up on this table? Well, how difficult do you think it would be for me to pull her off of this table? That was the illustration that my dad gave me a long time ago. Whenever I had a friend from high school that I just thought, Kendall, that I could do some good for him. I could help him. My dad said, you might be able to help him along, but remember, the world has a strong attraction. It's very strong. And that was his illustration. It's easier to pull somebody down than it is to pull somebody up. We need to bear in mind that do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits, 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them. Don't envy godless men. Don't enjoy their company. Don't do that. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. We need to promote family togetherness. Home is a gathering place. I realize that we live in a transient world. We got a lot going on. But there are certain things that we need to be able to do, particularly for the time of getting together for worship. The worldly friends, and young people and old people need to understand this. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. I've made this comment before. Up until 2017, I worked in the secular world, and I was around people who made a lot of money. A lot of money. And I've seen people who had multiple commas in their portfolio. But I never went to a funeral or a visitation where I ever heard any one of those men who ever said, I wish I'd have spent more time working and less time with my family. And most of the time, people that are working to buy things they cannot afford to impress people they don't know and don't even like. We need to bear in mind that money is only good enough to buy what we need and pay what we owe. If we don't owe anything and need anything, then really, what good is money for? You can't take it with you. I'd pay a lot of money for some things to occur, but they're not going to happen. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. The world is concerned about worldly things. Matthew chapter 6, 19 and 21. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither rust nor moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through and steal. But I think verse 21 is the key verse. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. What's important to you? You can talk to a person not too long, and it won't take long talking to them, Tim. They'll tell you what's important to them. Football? Fishing? Hunting? They'll tell you what's important to them. It won't take long. Why do we lose young people? A lack of proper teaching. Wrong teaching, maybe no teaching, bad teaching, no example or bad example. Hypocritical parents, worldly friends. Evil influences, surrounded by temptation, TV, magazines, movies, school, fashion, friends. We need to abstain from every appearance of evil and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. Be careful that you don't spoil your child. Lamentations 3 and verse 27, it is good that a man bear the yoke in his youth. It won't hurt little Johnny if he sweats. It'll be okay. He'll be all right. Learn how to work. And then we have the situation with church problems. Many churches are filled with fussing. personalities, opinions, power struggles, cantankerousness. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by another. Galatians 5:15. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, so that you also love one another. By this we'll all know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. John 13:34-35. We must not neglect their spiritual health. Therefore we must give the more heed to the things which we have heard, lest we drift away. For if the word spoken through angels proved steadfast in every transgression and disobedience, received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed to us by those who heard him? But here's what we also have to understand. You got to teach your children. And there's going to come a time when they're going to be on their own. They're going to be free moral agents. And they have the right to choose. You need to have prepared them so that they will make the right choices. For if their first is first a willing mind, is it accepted according to what one has and not according to what one he does not have? 2 Corinthians 8:12. For each one shall bear his own load. So then each of us shall give account of himself to God. We're not going to be judged as a group, not as a congregation, not as a family, mom and dad, brother and sister, husband and wife. Individually, we're going to be held amenable and held accountable. Our example, our teaching and influence can help lead them, but they ultimately must choose. They have the right to choose. Unfortunately and sadly, sometimes they may make a bad choice. And I hate that. So, as we close, why do we lose our young people? Lack of proper teaching, hypocritical parents, worldly friends, fail to restrict them, evil influences, church problems, drift away, free moral agents. My suggestion is give them your time. Love them, discipline them, teach them, show them, pray with them and for them, and take them to services. Don't send them to services. Take them. We spend a lot of time at the ballpark. We may spend a lot of time at the field when they're performing in the band or in some athletic or something else. And they see us showing interest in that. Do they see us showing interest in a gospel meeting? Now, I'm not saying that I'm the one that's going to bring in the big crowd, but do you suppose there's very many churches today, this week, that are having gospel meetings where they're having to bring chairs out? Do you suppose? Why? Because few there be that find it. But why do you not want you and your family to be the ones to find it? Making a difference. A young man collecting seashells notices an aged fellow walking along the beach. He saw this old man walk a few steps, bend over, pick up something, fling it into the ocean. As the young man watched the aged man, he repeated this over and over. Finally, or filled with curiosity, the young man moved closer until he realized what the old man was doing. He was picking up one of the many starfish that lay dying on the beach and throwing them far into the water. The young man thought this effort was an incredible waste of time. So he asked the old man, "Why are you taking all this time to try and to save one starfish when there are thousands on the beach? You know you can't possibly make any difference." The older man smiled, bent over, picked up another starfish, and flung it into the ocean. Then he said, "It made a difference to that one." Let us do what we can. I can only do what I can. You can only do what you can. But don't give up. Don't give up. Keep on keeping on. Pray. Encourage. Study. Teach. Look down the road. Am I doing the right things? Don't pitch your tent towards Sodom. Don't do those things that you know they're going to take your children in a bad way, in a bad place. There's more important things than having the big house and the fancy cars. I say all of this truly from a different perspective than I did 2.5 years ago. When I suddenly lost my wife, I was gone to the Bible study over at Tri-Cities. My daughter, called and said, have you talked to mom lately? I said, no. I said, I bet this Bible study. She said, yeah, I know she does. She was here Sunday night. They attend over at Northside in Lexington. She said, yeah, I know, but she's got Piper. She was a year and 5 days old at the time. I was eating lunch with Frank Ritchie, and we were headed down to Russellville. This was before Johnny Richardson passed away, and we were going to go visit Johnny Richardson. About 30 minutes later, she called back, and she said, Dad, she's not breathing. She's blue. I'm doing CPR. 911 is on the way. I said, Ashley, what are you talking about? I was afraid she was talking about the baby. She just said, Dad, it's mom. Well, obviously, it affected me, and it affected my children, it affected others. We assumed the whole time that I was going to be the one to go first. We'd made preparation for me to go first. Just like we had prepared for my dad to go first. And they had made preparation for my grandfather to go first. My grandfather's wife passed away first. My mother passed away first. My wife passed away first. We weren't expecting that. So my children, the oldest of which at that time was 27 years old. The youngest was 21. I hate it for them. And they are looking forward to me being able to bring Martha into our family. But it was sad for me whenever she said, Dad, she said, and this was Ashley, she said, Dad, she says, we're looking forward to Martha being a part of our family. She said, we're glad that you're going to be able to get another good woman, get a wife. She said, but remember, we're not going to get another mother. When people talk about on the things that they were taught, the things that they learned, when she came out of denominationalism and she stood against her own mom and dad and she would not take the children to Boaz and be gone on Sundays and to go to the beach and to go do all of those things, it was not because of me. Oh, Dad's just a preacher. Or Dad's been like that his whole life. It's because they saw the example of their mother who stood against her own parents and said, no, we're going to do what's right. Her mother said on more than one occasion, all y'all do is church, church, church. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. I wish that I could talk to more young people and encourage them to make sure that their calling and election is sure. Is your heart right with God? Where are your affections? What's important to you? As we're about to sing this song, if I've said anything, I hope it is that I care and I'm concerned not only about my own children, my 9 grandchildren, but your children, because that's my responsibility. Because that's what I want to. I don't want to see anybody go to hell. And the reason I don't want anybody to go to hell, I want anybody and everybody. And that's why it amazed me when people had a come apart whenever they got mad at Billy Graham, who said they felt like that Vladimir Putin ought to be prayed for. And they went crazy. Why would you pray for him? He said so that he would get turned away from this evil wickedness. That's the whole idea, to turn away from the evil wickedness. Don't give up. Don't give up. Please don't give up on anybody. Not on your children. Not on your grandchildren. Help us to give diligence to make our calling and election sure. Would you give us some thought while we stand, while we sing?